Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
It's 8:43. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your Morning Mayhem. It's 101.9 Hi FM. And of course, we were talking about the new bloke in Syria. Certainly, if you go through a little bit of his track record, he is far from the moderate that the Western press seems to want to paint him as. Sharon Haskell is an Israeli politician, member of Knesset. We wanted to get her take on what is happening in Syria. Sharon, a very good morning to you. How are you doing?
Hello, good morning.
So there's obviously always, we do this a lot, don't we, in the West. We try and embrace the change because change is good. And we always are filled with hope and I don't know, rainbows and sparkling lights. But in fact, it's not that simple here, is it?
No, it's not simple at all. I think we are living through an extremely complex time. These are historical times. I mean, what you've seen in the last year, that was the beginning of the Third World War. And it's not a territorial war. Our war with Hamas, with Iran, is a religious and a cultural war. This is the war between radical Islam and between values of democracy, freedom, equality. And, you know, when you've seen that war in the last year and a half, I guess for the Syrian opposition, the Syrian rebels, the Turkish, you might say that all the stars sort of aligned for them to prepare a ground, the ground for, taking over Syria and toppling Assad. Is it good? Look, I don't think that when an extremist groups take power, especially in the Middle East, our experience is that it was always dangerous, bad. The people who paid the most grave and horrifying prices or minorities. And usually, you know, these are Christian minorities, other minorities like the Yazidi and the Kurdish. And we'll have to see how this is unfolding. And we'll have not to listen, but see the results and also the actions of the one who actually took over Syria.
The interesting thing over this last war is that, from what I understand, Syria remained, I won't say neutral, because they allowed the flow of weapons and the use of their land. But aside from those almost passive that passive involvement, Syria and Assad didn't try and take advantage and attack Israel on another border, which was the Golan Heights. Carry on.
Yeah, you know, I just want to a little bit correct it because it's not exactly accurate.
Okay, good.
There were some rockets being fired from Syria. Some are from militant groups. Some are backed by Iran. But there actually was some breaches that we've actually absorbed. But the fact is that Iran has used Syria as a trafficking routes to pass all of their weapons arsenal through the border into Lebanon, and more so also don't forget the Syrian production of arsenal, of chemical weapons, of drugs who are being used by soldiers who committed crimes against humanity and war crimes on the 7th of October. So there are many aspects of the roles of Syria that weren't as major as from Lebanon, because
I'm not suggesting that Syria was a friend of Israel's at all. What I'm really asking is, even if there was a limited amount of activity on that border, is that because it was more prudent for Syria to stay out of this conflict and allow their area just to be used as a transit and for whatever else you've said, or does it indicate that Syria lacks the ability to actively engage in a war with Israel?
Look, it is difficult to say, and I guess that Assad might have some interviews and might propose his opinion. I can only guess, but I think that obviously strategically it wouldn't have been the right choice for him, and therefore also the results, you know, when Iran, and we have to put it on the table, Iran has and had a huge appetite. Okay. And you know, even when you have a big appetite, there's a limitation for your capability. There's a limitation on, you know, no matter how much you love a certain type of food, there's a limitation on how your body is capable of taking it in. And with Iran's huge appetite, they were a little bit over their head, and they were absorbing too much. They were opening fronts against Israel a few of them, and so we had to eliminate some of their leading military leadership, and that was affecting that effect was in Syria and in Lebanon in order to reduce the Iranian threat on Israel. For a year, they've been attacking us from so many different borders, and they weren't capable to feed that appetite that they've had, and that contributed. And obviously, someone else is going to use that vacuum, because when strategically, they are spread on so many front and they are incapable of defending it on the same time, you know, you could almost guess that, you know, that Turkey and the rebels are going to use that. Iran is too busy with its war against Israel. Russia's busy against its war in Ukraine, and that's the opening in Syria that was actually open to the rebels and to Turkey.
What is the situation with regard to the Houthis at the moment?
The Houthis keeps on attacking, including yesterday, Israel. They keep on sending rockets and missiles. And obviously Israel will take into consideration whatever is needed in order to protect and defend our people. We have targeted in the past strategically some of their facilities in order to damage their capabilities. And if we'll feel and we'll see that they haven't learned the lesson and that we'll need to repeat that, we'll have to hit them probably even harder.
In terms of the US and the UK, they've also been fairly active against the Houthis. Do we have any idea in terms of how much of their capability has been damaged or destroyed?
Sorry, on which one?
The Houthis, because they've also been attacked by the US. There have been a couple of joint forces initiatives against them. Do we have any idea? You know, in terms of like Hezbollah, we get the numbers and we understand that X amount of their capability has been damaged. Mm-hmm. Do we have that information about the Houthis?
I think maybe what I can share is obviously that, you know, the military capability of the Houthis really rely on Iran. Yes, some of Iran's capability was damaged in our last operation in Iran, but that is limited as well. And so they are very dependent on the Iranian production and supply. From an economical perspective, they had a certain hit. They started rebuilding some of their facility back. But some of it will take them years to build back.
So Iran effectively has really been hit on many sides, the Syrian transport route and support, the Hezbollah, Hamas, and the Houthis. Just the final one that I do want to ask you about is Hamas.
But just one thing which is important to understand also, Iran's tentacles, Iran's army of terror, that's not limited just to the Middle East.
Of course.
They are spreading across South and Central America. I mean, Hezbollah, which is the army of Iran, is controlling the main illegal drug and weapons trafficking routes in South and Central America to pose a threat there. They have also operation and bases in different areas in Africa as well, some militant groups that they're actually cooperating with. Iran's plan is not restricted just to the Middle East. They have terror cells of Hezbollah and other militant group, other terrorist groups in Europe as well. It's important to understand Iran's plan is not just
the Middle East,
Iranian Islamic dominance in the Middle East, but worldwide. That is their goal.
So and then just going back to Hamas, Hamas welcomed the new regime in Syria. What does that even mean, given their relationship with Iran, which means their relationship with the old Syrian regime?
Well, look, their relationship is very complicated. And you know, if you want to really go in depth, this is sort of I would call it the triangle of a race towards Islamic dominance. On the one hand, you have the Iranian, which are the Shiite. On another hand, you have the Muslim Brotherhood. And there you have Qatar, you have Turkey, those radical Islamist ideas of world dominance. And they're racing each other on that idea, okay? And Hamas, obviously, it has a very strange strategic alliance with the Shiite, with the Iranian, but they are originally Muslim Brotherhoods and Sunnis. And so, obviously, that alliance that they had with Iran, you know, it's they say the enemy of my enemy is my friend. So they collaborated and they were trained by Iran, and Iran was supplying them weapons and, you know, economical support.
Absolutely, but, fascinating.
You know, it's not a natural alliance in that sense. And I mean, some of them were rebelling against Assad prior to that, and then they started becoming closer. And I mean, that is also a complex history there as well.
Well, I must tell you that you've really helped to try and paint a picture for us of the landscape, and I really appreciate you doing that, because it certainly has given me a very, very positive, very important overview of the area. That is where we do need to leave it. Sharon Haskell, thank you. She is an Israeli politician, a member of the Knesset, talking to us about the landscape in the area.